You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Brothers and sisters, be prepared for an ultra-spiritual journey today. Yes, hello, good evening, welcome, good morning if you're in Australia, good afternoon if you're in America, and, well, what are you doing up late in Britain? Anyway, so good evening. This is JP on Journeys with JP, and tonight I'm joined by JP. So it's going to be a double dose. I hope this is going to be a great deal of fun. So tonight, my guest is Mr. Ultra Spiritual himself. Thank you so much for joining me, JP Sears. Good evening.
Hey there, JP. That's the most schizophrenic introduction I've ever heard, and I mean that in the best way possible. And I appreciate me being able to whack my knee on the desk to interrupt that lovely introduction. But nonetheless, I'm happy to be here with you, my brother, JP.
Excellent, excellent. So, so I hope the pain was sufficiently enlightening. Which knee was it, by the way?
It was my left knee, so I guess that means I have issues with my mother, but I'm in denial.
Was she a Capricorn?
It's a good guy, and she was a unicorn, actually.
A unicorn, that's fantastic. Well, that joke's too late. My sense of humor is much slower than Americans. I have to write it all down So, you know, I came across you a few months ago. I don't know how long you've been doing your YouTube, but you look like you've been doing a lot of learning in order to get to the point of being able to see what it is and see who is really doing what. Mm. So do you want to go back and tell us when did you hit your head or have a motorcycle accident or... What terrible thing happened to you that woke you up spiritually?
Yeah, well, I was abducted by aliens, and they weren't the friendly kind. They were sort of a rude bunch.
They were the probey type, were they?
Yeah, like, you know, kind of like non-consensual probey type. But aside from that story, which obviously has a lot of plausibility, nobody can prove it wrong. You know, I think my sort of path into this realm of the spiritual and then the ultra spiritual. I was about 20, so I guess about 15 years ago, that's when I started to wake up to, hey, there's more to life than what I can sense with my five senses. And I am also not who I think I am. So who the hell am I? So that started my path. And then when I was 23, I moved from the middle of America, a state called Ohio, just boring, flat, out to Southern California. And Southern California is just highly densely populated with the new age, spiritually minded, yogic people. I lived in Southern California for 10 years. And I think that, in addition to my own path, being in California gave me a lot of fodder for the videos that I play around with present day.
So basically, you found yourself amongst hippies and your reaction to it was like, where exactly did you kind of place yourself in relation to the people that you found yourself around?
Yeah, you know, when I would look around and say, hey, look at all these hippies, I think I deserve to raise my hand and say, you know, I was one of them. I think I still am in many regards, to be honest with you. So, you know, everything that I'm having a satirical, comical play with in the videos, there's some degree of that was very true in my life, and some of it still is very true in my life. So Yeah, I was one of those weird people that I was looking at. You know, I had to look in the mirror here and there too. And I think part of that was like very genuine, like, hey, here I am. I'm finding my way, getting into this spiritual path. And then it also took me a long time to realize kind of my take or my part and sort of the spiritual bypassing part of it all. When I started doing the videos, that's when I was really realizing like, hey, I am also guilty of using my spiritual practices and spiritual beliefs to actually interfere with my spiritual life while delusionally believing that I'm just enhancing my spiritual life with it all.
Now that's the moment, isn't it? Because yeah. That's the moment when you actually pulled your head out of your own ass, as we say in Britain.
No, I love it. And it's kind of like when we pull our head out of our own ass, it's like a paradox. Like now we're seeing the world right side up again or upside down, whatever the inverse of our own ass is. And I think part of that paradox is, at least my truth is, I begin to realize the path I take to find myself can become the path that I lose myself on. So it's like the road you take to get to London will be the very road that leads you away from London if you keep going on it without changing directions or saying, hey, this path has taken me to a certain point. Now I need to leave this road and go to a road or another mode of transportation that serves me better now. So, you know, I'm biased because, you know, I'm just a human being. I'm delusional enough to be biased. So I do believe that we all have our version of this where we take a path to find ourselves and somehow just believe that that path will serve us well forever rather than saying like this path serves me really well right now. But, you know, when we blink our eye and 10 years passes and we're still on that path, maybe it is still serving us well. But I think we deserve to question, like, hey, has this expired for me? Like, is this actually the spiritual practice working against my spiritual life? Or is it still working for me? And I don't know everybody's answers, but I do know that's a question that we all deserve to ask ourselves.
The way that I saw when I first saw your video, it cracked me up. I mean, the first one, it just summed it up, and it was the inner sight. It was the being able to look at yourself, you know, as you just described, the way that you were able to humorously look at yourself and realize, yes. I mean, haven't we all? Don't we all, you know, just try to gain a little bit of one-upmanship? And I've seen this, you know, it's been a long time. I, you know, lived in Glastonbury 20 years ago and, you know, I live in Findhorn now and, you know, you see a lot of this, you know, many heads and asses and like a circled head ass. Anyway, the main thing is that people are taking themselves far too seriously and it becomes a dogma. Even though it's just one step on the stage, it's not the platform, it's not the landing. Oh, I like this step. You know, it's quite fun, you know. And you don't have to go to the next step where you have to sort of accept your, you know, liability that you might have upset someone once. And you wouldn't like that either, you know. And then you find out that somebody's upset you in just the same way. But the point I'm getting to is a very important point in, you know, the spiritual evolution, and that is spiritual competitiveness and spiritual jealousy. Do you want to kind of dig into this gnarly knot a little bit?
Yeah. Well, first, I'd certainly invite everybody listening to consider, how do you potentially practice spiritual competitiveness? And it's one of those things I don't like to ask people, do you do that? I like to ask people how you do that. I mean, let's just assume you're a human being and therefore you have a human ego. And I think our egos love to take very virtuous, especially spiritual concepts, and then use those spiritual concepts in very egotistical ways. So, you know, I'm more connected to oneness than you are, says the ego. And, you know, the spirit says, you know, I'm connected to oneness and I don't really need to tell people about it. And, you know, I think the bottom line, when we look at our version of spiritual competitiveness, you know, I'm more at peace than you are, or I'm even competitive with myself. I'm more at peace than I used to be, or I'm more non-judgmental than you. Therefore, I judge myself to be better than your judgmental ass. Getting back to my point, the bottom line with all that stuff is, I think it's bloody okay we do that. We all are infected with this persistent condition called being a human being. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not something we need to cure ourselves of. And part of being a human being, not the whole thing, but part of it is having an ego that wants to gratify itself, that wants to compare ourselves to others, that wants to attach and control and have the illusion of power. So, you know, for God's sakes, we all have an ego. And the question is, can we recognize how our individual ego will kind of practice this spiritual competitiveness? Well, maybe our heart, mind, and soul are practicing this spiritual practice for very genuine reasons. But I'm a big fan of believing. I think these are the words of Ram Dass. You can't get out of a jail that you don't know you're in. So with spiritual competitiveness, we're asking ourselves to realize what is the self-imposed prison that we've potentially put ourselves in. And if we can see it, then, hey, we can have healthy boundaries with it. And I think the very act of being aware of it lessens the intensity of it.
But oh, sure, sure, definitely.
And if we're in this self-imposed prison and we're blind to it, then in the words of Ram Dass, we're sure as hell not going to get out of the confinement of that jail that we put ourselves in. And I do also think that we need, like I'm telling everybody how they should be. I'll own it. I need a sense of humor. I need to be able to like not take that seriously. Like, yeah, I do this very dysfunctional, egotistical stuff of competitive spirituality, and it's okay. Like, I can be okay with it. I don't need to take the seriousness of that serious. Actually, last thing I'll say on this, JP, before I get too long-winded, because I'm just being egotistical and controlling the conversation at this point. I'm competitively talking with you. But the last thing I'll say is Oscar Wilde has a lovely thought, which is life is far too important to take seriously.
And, you know, I think this is the essence of what comedy has to be about. It's about the deflating this impenetrable bubble of someone's own self-importance. Self-importance in that they take themselves so seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, if I have this negative thought, 1,000 butterflies will beat their wings and New York will be blown down by a 700-mile-an-hour hurricane, you know, because something traveling at 500 miles can bring a airplane, a building down. Anyway, no. Anyway, so, I try my best in my own egotistical way to not be egotistical by being self-deprecating and, you know, by getting in there first, you know. Yeah. And again, that's still a competitive thing. But I justify my own competitiveness by saying I'm not so competitive. You know, I step out of competition. You know, I don't support competition. Everybody's got a thing, you know, but at the same time.
So you win by virtue of not needing to compete. Love it.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's so one up. It's like Uber one up. Anyway, nobody gets that, but you do. And that's good. But it's just you and me, right?
Nobody. I think so. You know, all the wise men are named JP. And then actually what JP stands for is just perfect.
Love it.
I think that's true. We can look it up on Wikipedia. It'll probably say something to that effect.
Totally.
But yeah, you know, on that, on your thought there, I love your thought about, you know, you compete by not needing to compete, and that's how you win. Yeah, I love that. It's like, you know, we will have our human condition projected onto whatever our mindset is. And like in the same token, I think we can even look at the idea of not being ego or striving to not be egotistical is one of the most egotistical things we can do. I mean, how gratifying is it to our ego to be able to say like, hey, I have no ego.
Yeah.
I'm that evolved.
Or I've managed to make an ego that appears to be quite a spiritual thing. and then they start listening to their own advice. That's wow.
Absolutely.
Because it gets to the point, you know, where their version of reality becomes an extreme dogma. And that's when it starts getting harmful, I think, you know, when you start making other people do what you want, according to a complete delusion.
Yeah. Yeah. Dogma is something pretty interesting. And I think we call dogma for a reason, because we inherently know that it's a belief that we once clung on to maybe help us. But it's become a life preserver that's made out of concrete now. And, you know, I think our dogma is primarily synthesized through the material of our seriousness about our beliefs and about ourselves and about what we do. And, you know, some of, you know, in our kind of paradoxical play today, I think some of the dogma that a lot of us have in the New Age community, both of my hands are raised on this one, is we have the dogma that says we should have no dogma. You know, being free of dogma, that itself becomes a dogmatic belief. So it's kind of like in the words of the wonderful philosopher Ice Cube, we better check ourselves before we wreck ourselves. And I think it takes a lot of humbleness to be able to say, you know what, I'm a human being. Of course I'm dogmatic. So what is my dogma? And of course I'm, you know, competitive and egotistical with spirituality and everything else. So what is my version of it? I think it takes a lot of humbleness to be able to see our version of that.
So where are we? Sorry, so I sometimes have to look at the clock just to know that we're not coming up against a hard break and you'll be interrupted. But we got plenty of time. So,
well, JP, yeah. there is no time. Didn't you read The Power of Now?
Actually, I've just been producing a show with a gentleman called Sean David Morton. I don't know if you've heard of him, but we were talking about the actual physics of time travel and time and how the secret programs have been actually doing, there's my stick, time travel in reality, you know, real, like,
oh.
These the time tunnel was a real thing. Anyway, long story. So it's very interesting, you know, that's how it's a spiritual thing. They discovered that the reason they couldn't teleport people, they could teleport things easily, but they couldn't teleport people. And what they realized is that they weren't teleporting their astral body or their spiritual body.
Wow, fascinating.
So they had to expand the range of the frequency, the spread of the frequency, so that it took in the high frequencies of the it was like they were being filtered out, you know, as if someone turned down the treble like that, you know. They lost their soul. And it, so where did that go? Yeah, I don't know how that. A little time travel aside, kind of thing. But we cover a lot of stuff, and you know, it takes, I like to take spirituality into the real scientific domain. Mm. So, you know, what Sean actually did just then was to prove the etheric body, which is the whole object of alternative medicine and alternative science, is to, you know, because once you prove the etheric body, it goes all the way up, you know, all through, sure, you know, angelic domains and the whole thing, and mythical creatures and dragons and giants and all that stuff, once you prove the etheric body. And they had to do it in order to fulfill their secrets projects, but it's still in the secret domain.
Well, in so the secret domain sounds like my next question, it might be a secret and you can't tell me, but where was this location, the time travel experiments done? Sounds fascinating.
You can look at certain ones. One is called The Sands of Time, and that's a book by Sean David Morton, and it's about that secret program. Just look under the word Montauk, Montauk. It was a secret base underneath Montauk Point, where they did a lot of time and consciousness experiments in the 60s and 50s. No kidding. This is like what all those sci-fi TV shows were about. They were basically documentaries showing you where they got to. And they had this thing called the time tunnel. We've been dealing with some crazy stuff. I tell you, really crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Well, you know, life is, what I'm learning hearing this from you is, life isn't as weird as I think. It's weirder than I can think.
Totally, totally. And you find yourself. That's kind of, I normally have a bunch of jingles, but my system is all upside down today, so I can't play my jingle. But normally I'd play the Batman Meanwhile jingle to bring us back to you.
Well, I've got to go into my head now. I love that.
So my regular listeners will know what I'm talking about. They hear it all the time. Let's take it back to JP arriving fresh-faced from Ohio. How old were you?
So I was going out to California. I was 23.
23. So really fresh faced.
Sure.
Raw skin against the Californian sun. Must have been. Was it like, how many culture shock levels were there for you?
Yeah, you know, it was so shocking that I was in shock to it all. So I didn't even feel the shock. But so big time culture shock. The place I grew up in Ohio, super small farm town called Bowling Green, Ohio. A small population, and it's farm fields all around, cornfields, wheat fields, soybean fields, and a real farmer mentality. And along, I think part of what I mean by that is a very traditional mentality. In part of that, I know there's virtue to tradition, yet part of what wasn't there in my experience was a progressive thinking, going beyond the way things are. So in Ohio, things were kind of just rooted, very traditional, slow pace of living, certainly. And then out in California, it's just like, you know, multiply all that by the speed of light, where first of all, it's massively overpopulated in California. So there's the culture shock of like, holy cow, I didn't know there was this many people on the planet, let alone here in California. And then there's the culture shock of the kind of the cultural tendencies that are very different. You know, for starters, and I think most significantly and beneficially for me, is there's a very progressive way of thinking in Southern California. Having a spiritual life is normal in California, whereas in Ohio, it was abnormal, especially, you know, a decade or more ago. You know, you're not religious, you're spiritual. What do you mean? So it was a delightful culture shock. And I think it was definitely the beginning of the proverbial cocoon beginning to break open. And I didn't know at the time the cocoon was breaking open, but I can, looking back, I can certainly see, like, yeah, I went out to California, the caterpillar inside of the cocoon, and California really helped me split open the cocoon and realize, you know, what's coming out of the cocoon, what I am now, is something dramatically different than who I was or who I used to be.
So then you saw this whole situation. Everybody was spiritual, but, you know, how did you have the words for it? Had you studied anything, like, you know, have you read any Alice Bailey or Blavatsky or the Course in Miracles or the whole bit, or did you just turn up like, oh, hello? And yeah, it's, well, like, must be coming onto a different planet because people are at a completely different level of consciousness.
Yeah, you know, there's a book called Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh.
Are you, totally. Well, I did it myself and, you know, got on my own conversations with God. So.
Brilliant, yeah. Even better. So you not only read the book, but you wrote your version of it.
Yeah. Well, I gave them a website.
Very cool. So, you know, I had read that book, which was a very meaningful book for me. I think I was 20 when I read that. It was a beautiful gift from somewhere beyond here for me to read that book. So some of the progressive thinking and the consciousness, it's like, yeah, okay, I had a little bit of a receptacle in my mind for it. It's like, okay, yeah, I'll read Conversations with God, but I hadn't got into all the other stuff, the, you know, Eckhart Tolle's work and all the other things that people do. So, you know, I had to live a lot of it firsthand. And, you know, there's some wonderful things that start to happen, beautiful changes in my life. And then after a while, I don't know what it was, maybe half a dozen years, it's like, okay, now I'm beginning to see that these beautiful practices, there's a shadow side to them. And, you know, these beautiful people who are lovely angelic beings and show up wearing this ensemble that makes them look like they're from India, like, they've got a shadow side too. And I started to be more okay just acknowledging, yeah, there's a shadow side to it, like everything else in the relative world. And you know, I think a big thing, to be honest with you, JP, what really opened my eyes to kind of become the observer of some of the shadow side of the spiritual realms in Southern California was the way some groups of people were using psychedelics, ayahuasca, different plant medicines. The way they were using it was the way 18-year-old guys use a keg of beer at a party. Now, their language was more sophisticated. They weren't speaking English. They were speaking more of a spiritualized language. And they had all these convenient rationalizations. But if I do believe actions speak louder than words, I was watching their actions. I learned to start ignoring their words. And it's like, yeah, these guys are just partying. They're calling it a ceremony. And they're using something very sacred in a very unsacred way, in my opinion, yet believing that they're using it in a sacred way because the substance itself is a sacred substance. So, you know, I'd see just really just god-awful, unethical stuff happening, especially in those kind of plant medicine circles. And it would make me sick to my stomach, which I'm grateful for. It helped give me a healthy sense of boundary from it. But that's the shadow around those plant medicines and how people were using them. Not all people, but some people certainly, that really started to open my eyes.
would you find that people would come out of these things more damaged?
Well, there, some people would come out of it simply addicted to, all right, let's get together next weekend and do this again. And the people who are addicted to the practices will be the first to say there's no addictive chemicals in these substances. Well, there's no addictive chemicals in gambling either, but people get plenty addicted to it. We can get very addicted to any behavior, especially a behavior that gives us a sense of belonging to a peer group. So there's a big difference between I want to commune with my spirit versus I have a deep wound inside of feeling like I don't belong, and I'm going to compensate for it by abusing a substance and using it in unethical ways. So I saw that. But as far as actual damage, there is a particular friend of mine. He is just horrible, but he actually did get diagnosed with clinical brain damage, and he was simply not right for at least a solid 2 years, if not 3 years.
Fried.
Yeah.
Boiled. So listen, by the way, on Wolf Spirit Radio, which is what we're on currently on two networks, just to fill you in, we're currently on two networks. One is the Freedom Slips Network at Revolution Radio, which is revolutionradio.co, and I also have to do some station announcements as well. Revolution Radio costs a lot to run because we have a vast number of listeners. But we're also on Wolf Spirit Radio, which is our collective Wolfpack type arrangement. We run on a lot more of the shoestring small donations, but we're always grateful, so everybody's grateful. Nighthawk has got some great offers at Revolution Radio. So if you go to freedomslips.com /support, and you can see some of the great offers. You can get seeds. I recommend seeds. People, you can buy gold, silver, not just seeds, but silver. If you're in the States or Canada, they can send you some silver for a donation as well. So do support a station like that. Wall Street Radio is subscriber supported, so that people who subscribe to our vast archive, it's 5 years of some of the top names in the what is now the Truth Movement, or whatever you might call it, the Freedom Movement, the Freedom Train, the Crazy Train, wherever. I mean, there may be some crazy carriages on the Freedom Train, right? That's where I sit. So here we are. So I'm talking with JP Sears, and we're also on Wolf Spirit Radio. And on Wolf Spirit Radio, we do reading books. Dolly Howard and Colleen Kelly and myself. I've only done a couple. But we read books like, Granny reading books for you. It's wonderful. And currently, we're reading Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. So there's your prime synchronicity number one for the show. And maybe you can talk a bit about synchronicity and how people take it a little too seriously or delusionally. Like number counters, people seem to be in a dream world all the time.
Yeah, JP, I apologize if I'm interrupting you. I'm not able to hear you very well right now. The audio level has come down a little bit.
How about that? Is that any better?
That's a lot better, my friend.
Okay. I must have touched something. So, okay, go ahead.
In the words of your mother many decades ago, don't touch anything.
Don't touch anything. Now, I tell you, things happen here spontaneously, without me touching them, and basically stuff happens, as George Bush used to say. I don't know. You know, I've got this Linux system that I kind of semi know about, and it sometimes does spontaneous things like cut off the audio feed. And I don't. I haven't touched the keyboard, and nothing's there, and no one's near the keyboard, and I don't have a cat. You know, I just maybe have ghosts. All I can say is I've got some very computer savvy ghosts who can mess about and mess with my head.
Yeah.
See your dog? He can hear it. What kind of dog?
Yeah, he's a little dachshund, and yeah, I apologize for him yelping in the background. He's actually, he's not having a good day. He's got a bladder infection. I had him to the vet earlier. He's on the right medication and a little bit of pain medication as well, but unfortunately he gets a little bit of a pain spike here and there. So yeah, actually I really feel bad for the little guy right now.
So what's he called?
His name is Zephyr.
Zephyr.
Like yeah.
Gentle breeze across the desert. So, well, we'll send, everybody send some love to Zephyr. We do a healing thing, you know, just to get weird.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
We do a healing thing on the Sunday, Wolf Spirit, and we do remote healing. And we use the consciousness field of the listenership. So everybody does a big sort of mass meditation. And we direct the consciousness to healing things and alleviating earthquake stress and stuff like that.
Mm.
Really, it does work. It's very strange and very effective.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a very interesting group experiment, really. You know, we just think, you know, we just do it and, you know, assume it happens, and it does.
Yeah.
So my question, is synchronicity and how these things, how things like that are synchronous.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I won't pretend to be wise enough to explain synchronicity. The best I can say is I'm in awe of them. And I don't know about you, JP, but for me, synchronicities, it just feels good. Like an intrinsic, really kind of inner fulfilling way. To me, it feels good to notice synchronicities. And I think if I were to pretend like I understood synchronicities, personally, I think the world on the whole could use a lot more of. And I know there's a show about synchronicities too, but I think one of the therapeutic benefits that I get from noticing synchronicities is it gets me a bit out of my mind. It helps remind me I'm intelligent. You know, me, the lower self, JP, I'm not in control of things. And I think there's a Zen saying that I absolutely love, which is the only thing you control is your ability to surrender the need to control. And, you know, when I see, you know, the stars going in synchronicities, it just helps remind me I'm not in control and I'm not supposed to be in control either. So personally, I love synchronicities, and by, you know, the shadow side, I'm sure we could try to absolve ourselves of personal responsibility with that statement. Well, yeah, heck, I'm not in control, so someone else made me do it. But you know, I personally am working on noticing more synchronicities in my life because I need more of it, to be honest with you.
It's like being winked at by the universe to say, yeah, it's, hey, yeah, okay, fine, and that'll do. You know, that's enough to make your day.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Please go
ahead. Go ahead. Make your day.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say your description of synchronicities is the best one I've ever heard. I love it. It's like being winked at by the universe. Game, set, match right there, my friend. That's awesome.
It's like, you know, these bubble pools, the kids jump around.
Yeah.
Like you've got these bubbles and that's what it feels like you're moving through. And sometimes the bubble just kind of bang and hits you in the face and you disappear into a little point, where everything comes together and makes your life make sense that this is why you're here. And this is, and in a way, it makes everything okay.
Yeah.
So, keep, keep swimming through the bubbles is my wisdom for the evening. But yeah, now people have been moaning about my audio, so let me now. What's happening there?
You're sounding good now.
Okay.
You had gotten pretty faint again, but you're right now at least coming through on my end. You're
getting
super
fainter.
Good.
I'm getting fainter. Yeah, I'm working on it. I think my computer needs a bit of. Long story. I'm going to go offline later on and fix everything, but at the moment I'm getting a lot of interference and distortion on my headphones and stuff. Anyway, so my guest JP Sears, here we are. So we were talking about, you know, the synchronicities and how they brighten your day. They're like a crumb dropped on the path. Aha, yes, that makes sense. Yeah. And really, to me, spirituality is all about making sense. Mm. What do you think?
I love that. You know, here we are, you know, we're a tiny speck of dust on a speck of dust called planet Earth. And obviously we're in this vastness of infinity, which is always bigger than we think it is. And I think one of the fundamental desires that our human heart has is a need to feel a sense of purpose. You know, please let there be some kind of purpose to this insignificance, which is my life. I think that when we look at the insignificance of our life, we're the super tiny speck of dust on another speck of dust. That purpose is what brings significance to what would otherwise just be a sense of insignificance. And so your notion of we just want to make sense of it all in spirituality, that, I'm right here with you, absolutely. I think life is already a mystery. I think there's far more that we don't know about ourselves and life compared to what we do know through our faculties, our brain, our mind. And I think part of allowing life to make sense is understanding there is this vast mystery, and the mystery will largely remain a mystery. And that's okay. And the purpose for the mystery to needing to be largely a mystery, you know, why we can't comprehend the incomprehensible through our incomprehensible small human minds. Like, why is that? So for me, understanding there's a mystery and it's okay. There's a reason why we call it a mystery, because that's what it is. It helps it all make sense. To me, helps it make sense in a way that doesn't explain it all. It just explains in a way why it can't explain it. And I think I lost myself there, JP. But good luck making sense out of any of that. That's my long-winded way of saying, oh, I love what you said, man.
Yeah. So how's the audio now? I've just changed microphone channels.
Yeah, I think really good. I think nice. I heard you just say, how's the audio now? Or I'm just hallucinating those voices in my head. In which case, the voices sound good anyway.
The voices, they got good audio. How they will. Yeah, 4x4.
The voices now have this nice, you know, this suave English accent. I love it.
Isn't it funny? You know, I always thought there's always been this thing with American accent or with American women who listen to my British accent and think it's really nice. They like it. And I realized why. All British people in American films are evil. So it's all for the wrong reasons.
I'm sorry, loves.
It's all for the wrong reasons. You know, I'm not really a bad badass. I'm just who I am.
Well, you know, they don't have to know that you're actually a good guy. I think don't kill their fantasy, JP.
True. I won't spoil it for anybody by revealing that the truth is far more mundane than anybody could could possibly imagine. But anyway, you see, I normally drink tea, and in honor of America, I'm drinking coffee, and I've drunk about four of them now. So I'm just about getting up to kind of get to a level of comprehension of Southern California. So meanwhile, where was I?
By the way, that was a lovely Batman sound effect brought to us by caffeine. I love it.
Yeah, caffeine has done it, because I tell you, I normally drink tea, and I don't normally drink coffee like this unless I've had an enormous meal. Because, you know, but I haven't. So, but anyway, enough.
Not done with the tea yet, JP. This is important talk. I'm a coffee snob, by the way. Are you a black tea drinker?
When you say black tea, do you mean like what I call British tea or workman's tea? Yes, black tea. Yeah.
Okay.
Blend Tetley.
I was just curious. And then the coffee you're drinking, is that just normal drip coffee?
It's cafetière. Which I know snobs don't like, so I apologize ahead of this, but it's Italian blend from my local co-op, which is it's nice. It's a nice coffee. Well, to me, it's nice, you know.
Yeah.
But like I say, I drink coffee very rarely, so I'm really getting a buzz from this. It's great stuff. Yeah.
Well, enjoy it. Last thing I'll say about coffee, if you have the opportunity, if you're at a coffee shop that, you know, is kind of big into the art of coffee, you might find a place that does cold brew coffee. If you have a chance to jump into some of that, JP, I would definitely invite you to. It's a lovely bit of the plant loveliness of the beans that you get that you don't otherwise get when the coffee is brewed hot. So I think part of the purpose of life is to have cold brew coffee.
I get you, because the volatiles will boil away. And, you know, I'm very, you know, very wary about boiling my coffee. You mustn't let it boil, because, you know, all the nice things that you want are the volatiles that have a low boiling point, and you'll just vaporize your flavor into the atmosphere where it's no use anymore. Apart from smelling great. Oh, wow, that smells great. Tastes horrible. Yeah.
that's true.
Mm. So, yeah, black tea is the standard here. Builder's tea, that's what we call it. Yeah.
Builder's tea.
Coffee. See, I tell you, this coffee has taken me into a frequency zone where everything is kind of fuzzy and malleable, but nothing is real. I'm sort of slightly hallucinating on it.
Well, I am curious, was your coffee brewed with ayahuasca?
It's taken me to the brink of death and back.
Yeah, okay, that's and not coffee
my
you're
DM,
drinking.
My brain is expanding, and I don't think my skull will let it fit.
Well, you've got the good stuff then. I'm happy to hear that.
I've got some good stuff. It's definitely some good stuff. Mm. So, hallucinating live on a, so it's interesting. So, and, you know, again, where we meet is the culture shock of, you know, see, I live in a place, Northern Scotland, near a place called Findhorn. I don't know if you've heard of Findhorn, but there's lots of hippies there.
Yeah.
Okay. And they all do this. And, I used to do this. I don't know if you, do you know Himalayan throat singing?
I think I do, but and, let's just say no. Just
and the and same. The harmonic chanting, which is the being able to sing one note and you kind of whistle this other note. And I've been doing this for a while, and I thought, oh, that's really cool. And then I came up to Findhorn in Scotland, and I met five or six people who could do it, and it was just amazing, and they were so much better than me. of course, because I'm, you know, in terms of art, I'm like, I draw the wibbly square, you know, I can't draw a proper square even with a straight hand. Everything wobbles. Huge low vibrations kind of coming through. So in terms of like finding my spiritual home, it really felt like, oh wow, these are my people. they are doing the stuff that I do. And, but then soon enough, I found that it was kind of just like Glastonbury, but on a different kind of meta level of up the arseness. And so, you know,
I love that term. I'm going to use that and I'll pay you royalties. Up the arseness. That's
so we get these goddesses floating diaphanously through in that kind of royal blue, kind of lavender blue thing that they have, and cashmere shawls, darling. And yeah. they're all English, like rich widows whose husbands were bankers, you know, so they all like got this evil proceeds, you know, from the squeezing of humanity, and they're all wafting around in their in their kind of fineries, not realizing that, you know, this stuff is like karmically schlepping, you know, dragging them down into hell. All the while thinking they're doing heavenly things, it's a bit of a dichotomy. And you can say, are they there for redemption? I don't know. The idea of redemption, I mean, not in a like a Christian form, but like, look at this, you know, I appear to have blood on my hands. Can I say sorry for someone? You know,
yeah.
Can people, you know, can you? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I find it really interesting how you mentioned, you know, after a while, Finhorn started to feel like, you said Glasgow?
Sorry, Glastonbury. Glastonbury. I said it very fast. Glastonbury. In the West Country, they all speak, no, they don't speak like that. They speak like that. That's right. West Country. And, Glastonbury is pronounced Glastonbury. But it's Glastonbury, yeah.
Gotcha. Glastonbury.
In Somerset. Yeah. On hill. So anyway, so yes, in Glastonbury, there is a certain amount of up their arseness, and there is a lot of ayahuasca going around, I have to say, and some legit and some, you know, as you say, you know, they're partying on what is essentially a sacred ceremony, and in a way, you get the same excuse when people smoke their Indian spirit tobacco.
Sure.
Oh, this is the stuff that they smoke in the peace pipe. Yeah, maybe once a year.
Yeah.
On a special day.
As opposed to 20 times a day.
That's right.
But yeah, you know, I appreciate you sharing all that. And, you know, to me, it reminds me of a lesson that I probably always need a reminder of, which is wherever you go, there you are. You know, so you can hear my dog where he is right now. Go into the Findhorn and you get all the up the assness of everywhere else, because there we go. I think there we are projecting ourselves onto the world around us, whether we're in New York City, Glastonbury, Findhorn, Southern California. And I think I just passive aggressively accused you, JP, of having a lot of up the assness. So, apologize for that.
Don't worry. But, I'm firmly, firmly sequestered between the cheeks. I have to. It's important, because nobody else will have any targets either.
But yeah, you know, I have to say, I think there's a significant legitimacy to us finding communities of like-minded, like-hearted people. And some of us call those spiritual communities. So much legitimacy to it. I mean, yes, I take the piss out of it in my videos because I'm playfully exposing some of the shadow sides. In the videos, I don't really bother talking about the light side because it's the light side. It's way more obvious to see. It's out in the light. But I do want to honor, there's great virtue. I mean, I look at my life, I've had so much benefit, growth, and support and connection being a part of like-minded communities. So, you know, I want to honor them while we take the piss out of them, and also realize that when we find a new level of comfort and support in a like-minded community, we have to remember our poop still stinks. We still have our junk that we need to resolve, our old wounds that still need to be healed. We can't just bypass them because we're in a lovely community now. So anyway, part of me was just compelled to speak that piece.
Let that compulsion ride. So listen, we're going to be taking, here we go. Perfect. Perfect timing. Thank you very much, JP. So listen, there'll be more of a JP on JP action after the break on Journeys with JP. Welcome back to Journeys with JP. And, that's right. And, here I am. And I'm here in Scotland, and I'm talking with JP, who's over in Southern California. It's very bizarre. It's kind of like having a kind of strange kind of organic mirror. Oh, how strange. Meanwhile, back in Studio B, at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, listener-supported station, please check the current area. That should be the one. Check out the Silver Rush this month, where you can make a donation of $100, and we'll send you a silver dollar that you can probably make colloidal silver from. Please tell me if you can make colloidal silver from this one, please, somebody in the chat room who knows about this stuff. Is it 4-9 silver or is it 3-9 silver? Don't use 3-9 silver for colloidal. Only use 4-9 silver. That's my silver. That's my colloidal silver advice. Anyhow, yeah, because you know, health. let's check out, because this is a big thing. Along with the kind of spirituality thing, is the whole health food thing. That sadly, it seems in the States is hijacked by, well, everything's hijacked in the States. It's really awful to watch. That, you know, what you get called organic is nowhere near what we call organic. Organic food, sure, is like food that you grow in your garden, and you're being rained on with aluminium or aluminum, and you're also being you know, cascaded with terrible toxic chemicals and all that stuff. And so what was organic is now like a kind of almost a plastic remnant of something that used to be food. And so there's a big movement to make it, make things more healthy and improve the body architecture by, putting herbs and spices and things in the appropriate places. Which I think is a very rich seam for a lot of over seriousness.
Yeah. You know, I think maybe it's some self-contradictory. I think what you bring up, it is a very serious consideration. I mean, having our nutrition be less than ideal, and maybe even far less than ideal, sometimes even when it's called organic, you know, there's a part of me that says, oh, dang, man, that's some serious stuff to consider. And at the same time, heck yeah, there's an over extreme. You know, and by the way, I was definitely an over extreme person with nutrition, for, I don't know, a good portion of my middle 20s, where, you know, everything had to be super clean. Like, God forbid I would even look at a piece of junk food or something that wasn't organic, even though organic isn't what it should be, as you so wisely point out. And then I also do have learned with myself, when I get over serious about nutrition, I do so with a rationalization that says, I'm going to take my nutrition super, super seriously to improve my vitality. So it's like, yeah, maybe I improve my vitality through, you know, 5 units of more nutrition per day, just to use arbitrary quantifications. But my obsessive compulsivity about it, my mental emotional stress about it, my control around the nutrition, what if that costs me 6 units vitality a day? You know, I've got a net loss. And I love the Buddhist philosophy of aim for the space in between, the middle way. I think it is absolutely ludicrous to be completely mindless about our nutrition and just eat things that sort of taste good but aren't actually food. You know, things that cost our body far more nutrition compared to what it actually delivers. I think it's just ludicrous to be mindless about that stuff. And then there is the going to the extreme in the opposite direction, where we become so controlling around our food that itself can perhaps cost us vitality, not to mention quality of life. So, you know, the balance in the middle, the space in between, what is that? I think it's an elusive question. It's an elusive point of balance. And I think at best, the only person that can answer that would be each of us for our own self. I think one person's answer of balance might represent a point of imbalance for someone else. But yeah, nonetheless, just a little delusional JP thought to the wise JP question.
Which one's delusional? Which one's wise? That's what I want to know. That's the mystery. One of us, or maybe both of us, are correct. And I think, you know, in a lot of people's, a lot of conflicts, people think there's only two ways. And as you say, there is always a space between, which accommodates everybody, strangely enough, you know. The room accommodates me and it accommodates you, and yet it doesn't complain.
Funny how that works. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Space. So, hang on. Have I got an effect? Oh, hang on. Space. Did that come out?
Yeah, that is very cosmic of you, JP.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
JP Sears.
There you go. All of a sudden, I think my ego gained 2 dress sizes hearing my name pronounced like that.
You can clip that out and use it. actually, I was wondering, maybe one day you can, or maybe you could do it right now, and I'll clip it out and just do me a jingle saying, "This is JP. Listen to Journeys with JP."
Yeah, you want me to go for it right now?
Yeah, why not? You know, and I'll clip it out and then later.
I love it. This is JP, and you're listening to Journeys with JP.
Awesome. Thank you. You heard it live on air.
I didn't even screw it up too much, did I?
You didn't screw it up. It's very important.
Well, you know, I'm doing my best. You know, my purpose of life is to meet other people's expectations.
I mean, the world is driven by insecurity. We do a lot of things because of insecurity. Actually, we do just about, if it wasn't for insecurity, we wouldn't do anything, would we? You know, let's face it.
And that's kind of insecure. It feels insecure to even realize that, but like, yeah, we are so, like I sit here hearing your lovely reflection there, and I'm trying to think of something I did during my day that didn't have some thread of contribution, at least, from insecurity. And it's hard to think of anything, to be honest with you.
Isn't it? I mean, it's like a pool cue kind of poking us from various directions. Like, and it's amazing that we get to the end of a small walk without being knocked sideways by this thing. I must do that. Oh, fuck up to do this. Oh, I've got to call the bank. Oh, what about the tax that I've been ignoring and all this stuff? And then there's this other freedom part of you that thinks, but tax, Yeah, well, who needs to pay tax anyway? You know, I'm a free man. And I walk in my galactic thing with my free man, and I charge for my time and all this stuff off the police. And I tried it. It works. And they really can't cope with somebody being very positive with them and truthful. Because the whole system, the legal system, is based on lies. That's what legal means. And so when you actually present the real truth to police people, they just really can't cope with it. It's very strange. I had a great time with them. It wasn't a very long interaction, but I think she'll remember me forever.
Oh, it's somehow you were her karma coming to find her.
Oh, absolutely. Because I was saying, you realize that you're stealing my car. No, we're not stealing it. We're confiscating it. Well, hang on a second. When somebody takes something away without your consent, is that what's that? Oh, that's stealing. So you're stealing my car. No, we're confiscating it. And I had about a 20-minute conversation that went on like that. I recounted the whole thing. It was in 2012, this thing. And it was such a strange moment in time that I'm not kidding. It felt like there was this golden beam shining like a spotlight, a theatrical spotlight shining down on me that needed me to deliver this message. We're here and we're not taking any of this crap anymore. They took my car. And so I walk these days, but it was worth it. It was really worth it.
She won the battle, but I think you're winning the war of philosophy.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, do you meet people like this? I mean, have you met like these freedom guys? And
yeah, you know, a little bit here and there. I haven't been too indoctrinated into deep conversations with them or super close acquaintances, but on the periphery, I've gotten a few earfuls of that kind of talk.
Oh, that's good. It's always good for a bit. The thing in Britain has been this whole thing about the TV license.
I don't know about that. What's the story there?
Strangely enough, in Britain, in order to have, in order to receive government propaganda, you have to pay for it. And it's a thing called the television license. And it was instituted by the BBC, and it's supposedly supporting the BBC in the programs that they do. But we're now seeing that the BBC are full of perverts and pedos. And so people are starting to wake up thinking, hang on a second, I'm paying these people £100 a year for the privilege of them buggering little boys. So what we're starting to wake up to is that the BBC is actually a terrorist organization that was involved in 9/11 and implicated because they were part of the scripted media presentation. So the people are trying to take the TV license money. They find some bloke, some gentleman, in the south of England. And what he did was to bring up all of this stuff, that, you know, the BBC are a terrorist organization, and I refuse to contribute to them being a terrorist organization, being a free human. And he proved it. And they lost the case, and they very quietly covered the thing up. But it's true.
The word quiet was redefined with how they covered that up. I bet it took it to a new level.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very shush. Very hush hush in the old abstract world. So that's the story of the BBC and the license people. And actually, that's how I got introduced to internet radio is, I started interviewing people who are into these, anarchism and, libertarianism and things like that, which is, you know, it's interesting. I'm philosophically open. I'm not one for the other, or, you know, my philosophy is love. You know, how can we all live together without killing each other? I think that's if there's any philosophy that you could start with, I think, you know, it's a basic. Where do we start? You know, this is it.
Yeah. I think that kind of information and, you know, even getting into conspiracy theories, I think it has some play there. I find it really interesting. I do know that my heart doesn't call me to spend really any time at all diving into those realms. Just because I guess my heart calls me to spend my time elsewhere. Yet I do find that kind of thing fascinating. And I also find that, you know, when I dabble a little bit into, you know, watch a documentary or whatever, I get angry. Like, I actually just feel worse without much solution to change other than the old be the change, vote with my dollars, be aware. Like, yeah, I got all that stuff. But aside from that, it's like, oh, man, I just feel worse the more I learn. And I don't know. Maybe that's why my heart calls me elsewhere. Maybe I'm just more purposeful elsewhere. I don't, or purposeful in my life elsewhere. I don't know.
Listen, you're doing what you're doing, and that's the good stuff. I mean, it I tell you, it's a breath of fresh air to have a satire about something that is kind of, in a way, it's slightly fresh on the scene.
Mm.
And it's very refreshing. 'Cause, you know, actually, I was thinking one day I would write a kind of stand-up routine. I've always been thinking, I've always wanted to have a stand-up routine, or write a stand-up routine about this kind of stuff. And
yeah,
man, you beat me to it, man. Yeah. And that's it. That's it, because I didn't act. Mm. I just thought, And when you think, that thought just thinks, oh, well, bugger him. I'll find someone else. Just like a bad girlfriend, you know.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we can shame you. Shame on you, JP, for not acting. And I would dare say that, there's plenty of material. I think there's plenty of time for you to still act. But yeah, I think your lessonry that you bring up is, I think all of us are guilty. I know I am, of having inspiration that I don't act on, and it passes you by. So I think the lessons that I learn, and I'm sure you've learned in your life, is when we have an inspiration, there is no substitute for acting on it. I think it comes to find us for a reason. But yeah, I would dare say I feel very blessed to have, I guess, been willing to honor the inspiration to bring the ultra spiritual comedy to life through, I guess, the loins of my video camera. And it originally started, I thought it was just going to be one video, yet I was very surprised, pleasantly surprised, to see kind of the wide reception and the little bit of enthusiasm that was drummed up from that video. And it's like, wow, yeah, there's a lot more where that came from. There's a lot of material in the well to play with. So I guess doing the little bit of a dance with the audience, that kind of taught me, like, hey, you should do some more, JP.
I think you should do some more, JP. As I said, I've enjoyed as many as I think I've seen. How many have you done so far? And what's the kind of listener? I mean, you're now what we call a YouTuber. you're a YouTuber. Oh, you're such a YouTuber. I won't say. you've got quite a large following. How does it work? Does it pay your rent?
It's a good question. Yeah, the following, it's been steadily growing. It's wonderful. I'm fortunate enough to have a little over 100,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel, and my channel has accumulated, I think, a little over 10 million views. And that's just fun. My priority is I do the videos for me. They're kind of like my art. And I don't think any of us have business doing our art if we're not doing it first and foremost for ourselves, which I think means honoring the creative spirit that moves through us, rather than, well, let me do this to try and impress people, or let me do this to try and build a large audience. It's like, that's just secondary. It'll happen or it won't. But I think what's most important is we honor our art. So nonetheless, I do my best to honor my art, and fortunate enough that a nice audience has followed. And yet YouTube is an interesting animal when it comes to making money, and I mean that in the sense of you don't make much money on YouTube unless you are getting tens of millions of views regularly. I mean, I'm talking, I've got 10 million views total over the lifetime of my channel, but to really pay your rent, you've got to be getting millions of views every month. So the ad revenue that I earn off YouTube, it's some nice extra money in my pocket each month. If a video goes viral, or close to viral for a few weeks or a month, well, that month's revenue will pay my rent. But regularly speaking, no, I'm not at the level where I could quit my day job and just live off YouTube, which some people can. And I think it's just wonderful. I mean, this is actually a really cool day and age where you can just be a creator with a video camera. And if you honor the message of your art and do it consistently, the world will support you in it. You don't have to be tied to Hollywood or you don't have to know people like you did 10 years ago. It's actually a very special time we live in, I think. And the YouTube platforms like that, to me, it's really power to the people. It puts the power in our hands. And I think that's also a little confronting, because it's like when we have the creative spirit now that finds us like, okay, I'm inspired to make this video, that's on us. No longer do we have the cop-out excuse of, well, you know, a video camera costs $20,000 and, you know, you have to have a TV show to broadcast to an audience. No, there's billions of people on YouTube now. So it really does put the responsibility right into our hands. And I think that can be simultaneously exciting and scary, because that's a lot of responsibility responsibility of bringing our art, our message to the world, that we're given the potential of, at least. There's something fun there to connect, in your words, something cathartic there, which is, you know, I need to process something around this material, something that I'm self-identified with. So I go into it and I'll write out a script, and sometimes I do it gradually where I'll take a week and just add a little bit to it here and there. And then other times I'm just kind of sitting down, and over the course of an hour or 2 hours, I'll write out this script. And then I get the camera out and film it. And I will add this to it. And this will probably sound ultra spiritual of me. The ideas for any of the videos, it doesn't really feel like I generate the ideas, like I think of them. It feels like the ideas just come to me. And I think what I mean by that, at least my version of it, is the ideas seem to be more intuitively inspired rather than logically inspired. So that's my take, and I might just be delusional and making that up, but at least it makes for a decent sounding story.
Well, you know, that's not an uncommon story for creative endeavors.
Yeah.
And it's certainly, I learned to be very spontaneous, because I used to have a music studio, and I used to open my doors. I had all the instruments there, and on a Friday night, regularly, so this is what you were talking about, doing things regularly. On a Friday night, I would open my doors and people would come. We'd have a little fire outside, and we jammed for hours, long into the night sometimes. Sometimes, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it would be a couple of hours and everybody go home. or I would get pissed off with everybody and like, okay, that's enough. Get home. Get off.
Yeah.
But I learned to try or, you know, to be. It was really a training of being in the moment, of being able to listen and feel and hear and also perform all at the same time, which is great training for internet radio and for public speaking and all sorts of things, to be able to just open your mouth and what comes out seems to make sense. And it's some people could call it channeling. I don't know what did Charlie Chaplin do when he was doing that great speech? Did it just come off the top of his head, or did he write it out? Who knows? But there are, you know, some people are just able to open their mouths and this amazing stuff flows out. And I think that that's the expression of the soul, which is what we're all here for to do.
Yeah.
Just express, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a task that we're all called to take on, which is honor what wants to live through us. And I think that what you're talking about is just that, what wants to live through us, what am I channeling, what river of life is kind of flowing through me that wants to seek expression. I think we all have that. The question is, do we allow it? And I to be fair to myself and everybody else, I think it takes a lot of practice and courage, and hell, if I could sound so American, it takes a lot of balls to allow it, to be in front of people and open our mouth and really not know what we're going to say. It takes a lot of courage. And I realize some people also express their art, what wants to live through them, not with words. Sometimes it's dance. Sometimes it's painting, sculpting, music. I mean, music is huge. But I think we're absolutely all called to express what wants to live through us in some way. And I think that expression part is important, where somehow what's within us, what's coming through us, wants to also seek expression into the outside world. And it's our job, I think, first to connect with that which is within. And then it's our job to deliver it to the outside world. And I think that's a bit of a bringing things full circle. I mean, we could be a hermit and find this great gift within that wants to shine to the world, but we stay secluded and we discover it for ourselves and don't share it. Hell, I mean, that's a great step. It's wonderful. Yet, I mean, my experience is these great gifts are delivered inside of us, but are not just for us. They want to live through us, not just in us. And it takes a lot of courage to be the messenger delivering the message within to the outside world. And I think one of the intimidating factors is we're bringing something to the world that is greater than just ourself. And I think that's intimidating, at least to my ego, because by comparison, what I am, says my ego, is less significant than what I bring to the world. And I don't know for sure, yet I do get curious. Is that one of the reasons why some of the great artists, musicians, painters, Van Gogh, is that one of the reasons why they become so tormented and either commit suicide or become dependent on self-medication through drugs or alcohol? Because they don't know how to handle the torment of feeling insignificant next to the significance that they bring to the world through them. I don't know, but I'm curious about that.
Will you still love me when you have 50 million views?
I think I will love you, JP, only because you have a cool name and a cool accent.
I love the way you seem to naturally speak in a very calm, clear manner. Does that come from your country living, or is that California? Has California slowed you down, or did it start out that way?
Yeah, I think it comes from my country living in Ohio. I don't think there's much more of a fancy story to it than that. But yeah, and I appreciate your reflection. It feels good to hear. And I think it helps me appreciate the manner in which I speak a little bit more. So yeah, thank you for sharing that perspective, my friend.
Thanks. Well, you know, it's like, dare I say it, maybe I will in a while, but some people make changes by shouting.
Sure.
Some people make changes by whispering. And some people just speak their heart. And I think that makes the greatest change of all, because when they and the heart doesn't speak very loud, and it doesn't argue.
Yeah.
And it's not competitive, and it's not trying to get a point in. It just takes its time. And the thing about country living, I live in the country. I live on a cow farm. Cow farm. We don't have cows. We have little bullocks. poor little fellows. They live 10 months, have a happy life, and they've all got funny little odd horns, and then they become hamburgers and haggis.
Poor little guys.
Poor little feathers. But, you know, they're very happy in their field. It's a nice life, you know, while it lasts. And they're very grateful for it. And they, you know, try and shag each other and stuff. But then, yeah. Anyway, meanwhile, the catharsis of being able to express this inner feeling of, sometimes it can be frustration that nobody's actually, you know, paying any attention because I'm not shouting at them and I'm not trying to draw attention to them, to myself. I'm, you know, I don't really want to, like, draw great attention to myself, but I do have an important thing to say. And I think you probably gained a few followers or listeners or sharers in your perspectives from putting out the comedy. You see what I mean? There's a kind of cross-fertilization.
Sure.
Have you found that?
Yeah, absolutely. The comedy videos, which in my opinion do carry a deeper underlying message, but hell, I'm biased. They're my videos, so...
No, I totally agree. Because they do. They're funny. They're ironically, funnily, seriously... innuendo-y, you know, kind of spiritually taking the mickey kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, you know, does he really or does he not? I hope tonight we've gotten to the real, you know, the depth of JP and got down to the ground level of, you know, actually he is really quite a nice fellow.
Yeah. Well said with all those innuendo-y words. I think you described it. What I intend is the deeper message and how it comes across. You described it perfectly. But those comedy videos by far bring more people into the work I offer than the serious videos that I do. And for me, the heart and soul of what's important for me is sharing with the world messages for healing, self-empowerment, and helping people connect with a sense of meaning in their life. And the fact that the comedy videos bring in a lot of people to my channel to then discover the sincere videos that maybe deliver those deeper messages in a much more straightforward way, that I think that's amazing, to be honest with you, and I love it. And certainly not everybody who's into the comedy videos will be into my serious videos. Absolutely not. But there's far more people finding my serious videos now compared to before I did the comedy videos. And it's also very important for me to keep my eye on what's real, what's most important, which is at the heart and soul of it all, helping people. So in the YouTube world, like the more niche and consistent your channel is, the better it is for its growth. So when my comedy videos started to take off, you know, there was some advice given to me that basically said, you know, JP, you should just make your channel into your YouTube channel into the Ultra Spiritual Comedy channel. Because when you put out serious videos too, it'll start to confuse your subscribers. I wonder, is he serious or is he comedic? But, you know, I have to check myself and remind myself, my goal isn't to just build the biggest YouTube channel for the sake of having a bigger YouTube channel than I otherwise could. The goal is to help people help themselves. And the fact that, as you point out, the comedy videos, not only, you know, okay, deliver a little bit of a message there, but also they're entertaining. Therefore, they bring attention to my channel, which has more straightforward, sincere, intimate videos on it. The comedy videos, long story short, essentially are kind of the bait that gets some people into the door for what I consider the heart and soul of my work.
The little dangly bit at the front of the anglerfish.
Absolutely. And don't get me wrong, I love the comedy videos. I mean, they're just near and dear to me. Yet, I have to realize, yeah, helping people help themselves, that's the real calling.
So, listen, to help JP help himself, all you have to do is go to his YouTube channel. And, you know, maybe, you know, just, you don't even have to watch the video. Just allow the advert to play. You know, just click away. It doesn't matter. Let the little banner run or something. Turn the sound down. You don't need to. But, I mean, if you did want to, like, actually kind of awaken with JP, you know, you go to Awaken with JP, which is his YouTube channel. There's it, huh?
So, I like what you did there. That's awesome.
So, linguistic programming aside, Awaken with JP, the YouTube channel, has more than just comedy. Are you a musician? Do you play music? Are you a polymath?
I wish I did, but the honest answer is nope.
Okay. And the Tibetan bowl. Do you have a collection of Tibetan bowl? Because that actually was my Tibetan bowl I played at the beginning of the show.
Now, I have one Tibetan bowl, and I'll tell you, I barely have that one Tibetan bowl. So my lovely now ex-girlfriend, her and I broke up about, what the hell is it? Call it 6 weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I just
Was a big kind of Pluto-Uranus-Neptune thing that kind of blew everybody's relationships up then. So,
Pluto ruined my relationship again.
Yeah, you can blame Pluto. Actually, really, you really can. It's all Pluto's fault. Because Pluto takes you right down to the nitty-gritty of, like, who you really are. No bullshit. And so if you're... If there's any stuff down there, it'll bring it up, and maybe somebody doesn't want to live with that anymore. So,
yeah.
And you know, that works for everybody. So I'm not pointing anything out, but it worked for everybody. Somehow my relationship managed to survive. I don't know, due to sheer tenacity of my girlfriend. She's from Berlin, you know, and doesn't let go. So it's great. So yeah, ultra spiritual and, Let's take it there. I'm sure there's been a few rich seams that you've mined on that, which is the spirituality of relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple relationship videos, and actually, synchronously here, I mentioned my ex-girlfriend. One of the relationship videos I did in the ultra spiritual sense is how to ruin a relationship, and my love.
And it worked.
Yeah. I'll tell you, we actually implemented everything in that video, and that's part of what made our relationship fail. And I think there was some legitimacy too. Like, it was healthfully time for us to move on. I think we each got what we needed from the relationship. Anyway, with all those rationalizations aside, I probably just said that so all the single women out there will think I'm actually functional, cover up my dysfunctional hoopla that happens in the relationship. So yeah, that girlfriend was in the video with me, and that was fun. Which, by the way, actually, back to the Tibetan bowl, I'll get back to the relationship in a second. But when I started dating this past ex-girlfriend a couple years ago, I got her the Tibetan bowl as a gift to her. And then, okay, cool, lovely gift, JP. And then, let's see, it was October of 2014. I was just shooting the first Ultra Spiritual video, and she's behind the camera. And right before I started, I was like, okay, let me grab your Tibetan bowl. Just, you know, a little visual effect here and sound effect. A little something extra spiritual here. So I dinged the bowl. And then, you know, for the rest of the videos, it was like, yeah, that's a good entry sound. Let me use that. And then some of the other videos, I'll have the bowl also as a visual prop. So nonetheless, about 6 weeks ago when we're breaking up, I'm like, okay, relationship's over. Get the hell out of the house. What stuff is yours? What stuff is mine? You know, the Tibetan bowl is hers. And she said, do you want it? And I said, no, of course not. I got that for you as a gift. You keep it. And she said, no, I want you to have it because it's kind of become a little bit of a mascot of yours. So the moral of the story, JP, is I still have that damn Tibetan bowl and I'm happy about it.
Ah, there was the product of that relationship, all summed up in one bunch of frequencies.
Which were expressed through one 45-minute long story. Boy, that was...
That was cool. Because, a lot of spiritual teachers never speak about this. My spiritual teacher actually did. Was that most people get their most inspiration on the toilet, right? And I asked him about this because I was saying, Master, back in the day, or something, I don't know. I was on the loo and suddenly I had this great thought and I was thinking of you and, you know, the whole mother-father thing. And it was great. And he said, oh, no, it's cool. Because he said stuff like that. He said cool and awesome. He said it's cool because your crown center is open. When your base center is open, your crown center opens up.
Ah.
That's the natural linkage. And why we need the chakras cleared in the body so that this communication can happen. But when you're opened your base center, then your crown center can open. And so when you're on the loo, you can get great ideas, and many people do. And that's the reason.
I love that
reason. Isn't that cool?
I'll add in another reason, which doesn't at all push that reason outside. I think it's maybe just a companion reason. Yet also when we're on the toilet, that unless we have our phone with us, which I think a lot of us are guilty of. So assuming we don't have our phone with us, that's the one time where we're kind of just sitting there, not doing anything, not distracting ourselves, not really occupying our mind by scanning information or having to drive a car or, you know, looking at our computer. So it's a little bit of free thinking time, also, along with the open-mindedness facilitated through open arseness that you mentioned.
Indeed. Once you've removed the head from between the cheeks, it's possible to gain great inspiration. And, you know, it's the great yogic form. It's well known by those sadhus and yogis from the Himalayas. The Himalayas.
Himalayas. Yeah, you sound so much more luxurious saying it that way. Us poor folk just call them the Himalayas. The Himalayas.
Actually, I've heard them. They used to call them the Himalayas. How about
Himalaya?
Himalaya. Yeah.
Yeah, that plays. I like it.
Yeah, that would be another. I loved you. You're talking about how to awkwardly pronounce spiritual words and the whole namaste and stuff like that. I have a whole other thing about that. But the idea of mispronouncing Sanskrit is something that you hear a lot of people do, especially as we're starting to learn a little bit more about spirituality on in these Truth Radio networks. By the way, have you had many sort of radio interviews or video interviews?
Yeah, I have. And I have to say, I love doing interviews. I love to, like, a conversation like this where we get to talk about life, work, the pursuit of inner peace. I love talking about these kind of things in interviews. So I do feel fortunate that I do get to do a lot of podcast interviews, radio interviews, some video interviews. Makes me feel important about myself, but also it gives me an opportunity to express things that are important to me, which I love, as well as converse with lovely people like you who have wonderful perspectives, and you have your own perspectives about life. And I love hearing your perspectives about my perspectives, which then gives me a new perspective about my perspective based on how I see it reflected to me through your perspective. I love doing interviews.
Perspective is cool. I like perspective.
Yeah, perspective's word of the
good. Day. That's it. It's definitely perspective. One of the words that, because there's, we have these alien perspectives, and my favorite is the Andromedan perspective, as they have these very kind of high-minded thoughts. And I might even think about making up a maybe. I'm not going to even start it. I'm not going to happen. All right, I know it was a thought that had kind of birthed, and I almost murdered it. Semi through the it's 9 second what's that word what's the thing when a fetus grows and
gestation
that's the word through that 9 second gestation of the thought I nearly kind of all right so the idea is of because there's a lot of people talking about extraterrestrials and abductions and my labs and all of that stuff, but there's not that much comedy on it. I mean, there was Paul the film which was hilarious. I saw it a few weeks ago again, and it cracked me up. But there's not much kind of ET comedy or people talking about that. So maybe that's another subject for stand-up that I've just put out into the universe, never to be seen again until I interview the person in a couple of years' time. Oh, well. That's the nature of my thinking. I think about something and then, there's that thought that came back. See, because I think that thoughts are things that have people, JP.
That I like that perspective, by the way. I think it's a very humbling one that screams the message, you don't have control, you measly little human mind you. I love that. But I also love your idea. I know if you implement that idea of comedy on extraterrestrials, it would be, you would have to be doing it for yourself. I don't think you could do that to try and please me or appease anybody else. So if you choose to do that for yourself, I'd be really excited to hear your expression of it.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to try it on my girlfriend at first because she's from Berlin, and they're really specific about their humor. Anything that falls short of just perfect. I love it. There's been cross-pollination tonight, JP. Definitely a bit of JP on JP action.
Sounds like a schizophrenic wet dream.
Oh, it does. It does. It's almost like I'm talking to my own egoic reflection of myself. Yeah, with more hair and more attractive.
Oh, well, thank you. Say more.
Probably a bit thinner as well. But anyway. Meanwhile, we're just at the end. We've got about 3 minutes left before the little guitar tune comes in. certifying the end of the program. It's been truly an enlightening, light, funny experience. Because light is light is light, isn't it? It's light, not heavy. It's like light, kind of bright, and it's light as in funny. So light is light, and it's lovely to bask in a reflective light that reflects back the light that reflects back that reflects back the light that reflects back. And I couldn't possibly have scripted that.
No, that is not possible to script. I'll verify that. But yeah, speaking of light reflecting light, I really do appreciate you, JP, having me on your show. I know your show is part of the art that you shine on the world. It's part of your light. And for you to invite me to be a part of your offering tonight, I mean, it's very humbling. It's very honoring that you look at some weirdo with red hair that lives halfway across the world and say, hey, come be goofy with me and let's talk about life. I love this. So I really appreciate you having me on your lovely offering to the world.
Wrong mic again. That's great. Thank you so much, JP. It's Awaken with JP. See, I even NLP'd myself. Awaken with JP. YouTube channel, Awaken with JP. My channel, by the way, is Studio 9 Jam. Studio 9 Jam. I used to have Studio Number 9, and we used to jam there every week. We used to start at 9 o'clock in the evening. So Studio 9 at 9 o'clock. And some tunes I've actually used on theme tunes for the radio. I've got an enormous archive of jam sessions that span me, sort of 6 or 7 years of all random spontaneous stuff. And some of it was good. Most of it was rubbish. But it's like there's a bell curve. There's a distillation,
Yeah, for sure.
We're in the land of whiskey here where I live. And there's a lot of distillation goes on all across the land. So thank you for distilling your humor with me tonight, JP Sears.
You're welcome, my brother. It's been a pleasure.
It's been fun as well. So do you have a website as well?
Yeah, I do. As of now, like for the next few days probably, my website is innerawakeningsonline.com. My new website, which is just going to be awakenwithjp.com, you can actually probably go there and there's some stuff live. It's not super complete. But so, yeah, the one probably to remember is awakenwithjp. That's .com. That's just consistent with all my social media stuff. And I think the other thing that's good for business, JP, is to confuse the audience with two websites. So anyway, that was probably brilliant of me. But nonetheless, for all you lovely people who are weird enough to not be completely weirded out by me, I'd certainly welcome you to visit me on my YouTube channel, Awaken with JP, in addition to the website.
Excellent. Thank you so much, JP. Somebody said JP squared. Fascinating, JP and JP. There definitely has been some JP on JP action. Thank you, everybody. Here's the little guitar. God bless you all. We love you all. And come back next week to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, on revolutionradio.co. We can't afford the M. Good night, everybody. And thank you, JP.